The Flames Talk postgame show starts now on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, let's get our Flames Talk postgame show underway. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this Saturday night following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle. Couldn't start the year 5-0, but they do get the extra point, and we've got lots to get to on our Flames Talk postgame show right now, but let's kick it off by going back to Seattle. It's time to go from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Back to Climate Pledge Arena we go, where Derek Wills is standing by with Mackenzie Weegar right now.
Well, thanks a lot, Pat. A lot of hooting and hollering outside of the Flames dressing room following a 2-1 overtime win for the Kraken tonight. Joined, as mentioned, by Flames defenseman Mackenzie Weegar. Mackenzie, your thoughts on this hockey game tonight?
It was an all right game. There was obviously chances back and forth. It's obviously not an easy building to come into, but we'll take that point. It's going to matter down the road.
Yeah, and there are nights when you don't have your A game and you've got to grind out a point or two, and this felt like one of those nights for the Flames. But I thought the Kraken played almost a road style here at home tonight. Did you see it the same way with the way they kind of clogged things up for you guys?
Yeah, maybe a bit. I thought they're obviously a fast forechecking team. They play the right way. But I thought, there were moments where we were playing the right way. We were all over them. We had our chances there, in the third period where we could have, shut the game out. But I thought Vladdy was our best player tonight for sure. Made some big, big key saves for us and, obviously move on to the next one.
I know that you guys aren't worried about the outside noise, but one of the things we heard a lot outside the dressing room before the start of the season were questions about Flames goaltenders. And obviously, you've got two good ones in Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf, who have helped you guys pick up 9 of a possible 10 points. I got the sense before the season started you were confident in both of them. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously been playing with Vladdy for a couple of years now. He's a heck of a goalie and, deserves, getting the shot. And so does Wolfie. He's obviously grinded in the AHL. He's got a couple MVPs, and he's been a big key part for them down there. But, I like the competition that they're having, and they're both really kicking well for us right now. So we'll need that all season long.
Mackenzie had a new defense partner tonight. How'd you feel playing with Tyson Barrie for the first time?
Oh, he's great. I thought, I could have helped him out in some different scenarios. If we get the opportunity to play next game together, I'll be better for him. I like his game. He's obviously played in the league for a long time. He knows how to play the game the right way. And, if we keep playing together, build some chemistry, I think we'll be a really solid D pairing.
Last one for you, Weegs. Next up is a game against probably four future Hall of Famers and the Penguins on Tuesday night. What's going to be important for the Flames in that one?
Stick to our structure. It's obviously a great opportunity for our team to, play against players like that, and especially young players who haven't played against them right now. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what we can bring to an older team, a team that with a lot of leadership. So we're going to have to play the right way, physical, and make them defend hard.
Weegs, you can't win them all, but the sign of a good team is being able to pick up a point. Maybe you didn't have your A game, so congrats on doing that and on a 4-0-1 start to the season, and good luck to you guys against the Penguins on Tuesday.
I appreciate it.
Mackenzie Weegar joining us post-game from outside the Flames dressing room, and now we send it back to Pat in our downtown studio.
From the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you here. Phone lines 403-240-4444. Got a couple lines open right now if you want to jump in. Text line 960-960. Following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle is Megan Mickelson with us on our Flames Talk postgame show as well. Mick, just quickly, look, they scored the first goal late in the first period, but this one kind of felt destined for extra time all night. There was not a lot of room out there, was there?
No, there wasn't. And, to me, the Flames just looked a little bit disconnected and were kind of forcing plays in the neutral zone and didn't really have their A game. But I mean, Dan Vladar was outstanding, made some massive saves, but so was Joey Decord. I thought the Flames had the opportunity to win that one late in the third period, had some really good looks, some good chances. Connor Zeri had a good look. Nazem Kadri had a good look as well. So, to be at this point in the season, five games in, and to have nine of a possible 10 points, like you think of that. And so just not the game that they would have wanted tonight. But overall, I mean, Look at these five games. They've had a great start to the season overall.
Mick, who would you select tonight as your hardest working Flame if I were to ask you that?
No, I'd have to give it to Dan Vladar. I don't think without him, they're not walking away with a point in this one. And, you know, there was one play, I believe it was in the second period, where he looked like he was out of position and Matty Beniers ended up missing the net, had a wide open net. But outside of that, like, he was incredible and flawless in the way that he played. There was a lot of odd man rushes that he played extremely well. So I have to give it to Dan Vladar.
And the rotation, I bet they'll go right back to Dustin Wolf on Tuesday against the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is next up Tuesday night. It is Dan Vladar as your hardest working Flame tonight. Another quality performance since the first period against Vancouver. It's been really solid for number 80. Get home safe, Mick. We'll see you on Monday.
Thanks, Pat.
That's Megan Mickelson signing off from Seattle, where the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Kraken. So the franchise best 5-0 start. They're not able to do that. They start their season 4-0-1, which means they do have an opportunity still to set a new franchise mark. If they're able to win Tuesday against Pittsburgh, they will be able to make it the best ever six-game start in franchise history. Remember, 2 years ago, they started 5-1-0. Well, if they can start 5-0-1, that'll be the best start through six games in franchise history. We'll see if they can do that. That's on Tuesday. Speaking of which, the chase for a 5-0 start was our marquee matchup tonight, brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. And, you know, look, this was another night where maybe the Flames, you didn't look at them saying, hey, they look like an elite team tonight or anything like that. They didn't look bad, but tonight they just looked, I think part of it was the styles clash, because both Seattle and Calgary play very similar hockey. So sometimes it can turn into kind of in the muck type games like what we saw this evening. But, you know, this was not a technically perfect game for the Flames or either side. Let's be perfectly honest here. It was a pretty just kind of grind them out in the mud type game for both sides. But hey, the Flames fought hard and they've played five games, and I think they've showed some real character and they've shown some real resilience and just some real, to steal Wes Gilbertson's term, stick-with-itness or stick-to-itness that they have been able to show so far through five games. So, no, they didn't set a franchise record. No, they weren't able to start a season with five straight wins for the first time ever, but there were still some positives in this game, some negatives as well, and we'll get into all of that. But that was our marquee matchup tonight, brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. It's time to Toyota at the giant Country Hills Toyota. The 2024 Toyota truck clear-out is on. Get financing as low as 0% OAC with zero down and no payments until March 2025. A few other statistical, I guess, anomalies for you, or statistical notes for you in this game. So, first of all, this is the first time the Flames have ever lost at Climate Pledge Arena. They are now 6-0-1 in seven trips to Seattle's home barn since the Kraken opened or entered the league in 2021-22. So, still unbeaten in regulation in that building are the Flames at 6-0-1, with one more trip there this year. Here's the really interesting thing. So, had the Flames won tonight, they would have been the 26th team to start a year 5-0 since the cap era began in 2005-2006. Of the prior 25 teams that have started the season or a season with five consecutive wins, 24 of those 25 teams went on to make the playoffs for a 96% success rate. Here is what's fascinating, which just so shows you how fickle these stats can be sometimes. In the account, in the occasions of teams that start with nine of a possible 10 points, like the Flames have, or 4-0-1 to start the year, 19 teams have started 4-0-1 or have gotten nine of a possible 10 points to start the year, and only 57.9% of the teams have made the playoffs. So, just shows you how fickle, from 96% to about 58% based on 1 point. So I think that you can maybe put a little bit of grain of salt in terms of, you know, the playoff numbers based on starts, so on and so forth. Fact of the matter is, Flames have got themselves out to a very nice start. They've got 9 of a possible 10 points. They've put themselves in a position where they can protect a little bit, and we'll see what they do with that opportunity to protect. They don't go 5-0 to start the year, which is too bad. It would have been cool to see a franchise record in something that's never happened in, what, however long it's been since Atlanta was in the NHL. So, what, 54 years or whatever it is. It's never happened before. Would have been cool to see. You'll still take 4-0-1. If you would have told Flames fans they were going to start 4-0-1 the way they have, I think a lot of people would have taken that to start the year. Boy, we got a lot to get into. Who'd you like tonight? Who didn't you like tonight? 403-240-4444 is your phone number as the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to Seattle tonight. Tonight's game has been brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. Yeah, we have got a ton to get to. Your phone calls at 403-240-4444 if you want to jump in and chat. Your text at 960-960. Lots of texts, lots of phone calls to get to tonight. Some Saturday night action following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle. Flames Talk postgame on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Your final score from Seattle. Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Seattle Kraken. Jordan Eberle wins it at the 47-second mark of the extra frame. As we continue along, phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. Text line is open at 960-960. Truthfully, didn't love the Flames tonight. Thought that they had some good stretches. I thought the backline line was quite strong tonight. I thought the fourth line had their moments when they were out there. But, you know, the big stories of this game to me, Dan Vladar, who we'll get to, and too much penalty trouble. I mean, Megan Mickelson pregame, one of the keys to victory was got to win the special teams battle. And while the special teams battle ended up sawed off, I think in the context of this game, you could probably make a pretty good argument the Flames lost the special teams battle because it did play into how much their rhythm was messed with. They took 4 penalties in the second period, got them all out of rhythm, messed with ice times for everybody because guys like Adam Klapka were benched, not because of performance, but because he doesn't kill penalties. And he only played 6:32 tonight. Anthony Mantha only played 13:43. So when you have situations like that, Ryan Lomberg played less than you'd like, I think, him to be playing because there was so much time for the penalty killing groups that were out there. So those are the two stories of the game for me. Dan Vladar, outstanding. Too many penalties. I did really like what we saw from the backline line. And I thought the Kadri line had lots of offensive zone time. But I also thought Kadri struggled a little bit individually. First time all year I felt that Kadri has had a rough night with some of his decisions. But I also felt like the line was quite impactful at 5-on-5. Like, Kuzmenko was very dangerous. I didn't mind Coronado with that group at all. And when they were out there, high danger chances were 5-0 for Calgary at 5-on-5. So the line, I thought, was fine. But for the first time, I felt Kadri's night was a little off. And then the backline line with Jerry and Coleman was very good once again. They were out there for 3-1 high danger chances. And here's just a little bit of context again. The Kadri line 100% of the time started in the offensive zone compared to the defensive zone. Not a single defensive zone faceoff for the Kadri line, either neutral zone or offensive zone all night. Whereas the backline line, 7 defensive zone faceoffs, just 2 in the offensive zone and 1 in the neutral zone. The backline line was dynamite tonight with Coleman and Zeri. Best line on the ice for the Flames in this game, I felt. So really, really good to see in that regard. Lots to get into. Let's hear from the head coach, Ryan Huska. Postgame just wrapped up at Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle following a 2-1 overtime loss to the Kraken.
Just how you saw the flow of this game develop throughout the first half?
I don't know if there was a lot of flow. I mean, stretchers bar game, like, it was a tight checking game. It was a you look at it, a pretty good road game for us in a lot of ways. We were good away from the puck. I thought we limited chances against, for the most part. We just weren't sharp with the puck, and I think that's where the game kind of caught up to us at the end.
Rest suspension, just the defending felt like that was still there and consistent through the night, but where does that puck play start? I mean, is it just more the breakouts and...
Yeah, Parks, it's everywhere from getting out of our zone cleaner. It allows you to enter the offensive zone cleaner. And I thought at times with it, we were stubborn. We were trying to make plays against a team that is notorious for tracking back hard. And at times I thought we overhandled the puck instead of just putting it in behind and looking to work down low.
Two power play goals, obviously, one from each team. But yeah. How did you see, I mean, the stretches there where you were probably killing a little bit too much for your liking?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the second period, we're in the box a lot. And some of those penalties are needless penalties when you look at it. So, again, it's you check with your feet and you have to really work to not use your hands or your sticks to put you behind the... or put your team in a tough situation, because it takes people out of rhythm and takes the momentum away. And I kind of feel that happened a little bit to us tonight.
Any lessons in this one in terms of just how you kind of manage a game like that as it starts to feel sticky?
Sure, that's something for sure. But again, it was a pretty good road game for us where we found a way to hang around, and at the end of the day, we found a way to get a point out of here in a tougher building to play in. So that's the positive side of it. I think we could make it a little easier on ourselves as we move forward by being better with the puck.
Last one, what did you get out of your goaltender here?
I thought he was excellent. He made some great saves for us at key times. So that's been one consistent thing we've seen in our five games so far, is the goaltending. And I thought Dan was probably our best player tonight.
That is Ryan Huska postgame in Seattle, head coach following a 2-1 overtime loss. We'll get to the last point in Vladar, who Huska just called the best player for the team tonight, in a second. But I did want to pick up on one thing, because I do think this is a positive constant through the first five games as well. Flames have been really good without the puck, and even though they did look at times a little stunted, a little sloppy, or just kind of a little, perimeter and vanilla maybe a little bit on with the puck and in the offensive zone, Flames at 5-on-5 still only allowed 4 slot opportunities from Seattle, 4 high danger chances from the Kraken over at Natural Stat Trick. So Calgary continues to do a good job away from the puck, and that has been one of the constants through this 4-0-1 start that I think they deserve a lot of credit for. Because remember a year ago at this time, when they were off to that dreadful 2-7-1 start, they were horrendous away from the puck. Well, there's nowhere near the same adjustment this year, right? There's nowhere near the same type of learning curve, because with all the holdovers from last year, well, the defensive and away from the puck and the D-zone system is second nature now. It wasn't at this time last year, because Ryan Huska was implementing some new things. This time around, second nature, and it's just a few guys here and there who are getting up to speed on it. And I think you've really seen that. Just again, 4 slot chances for Seattle at 5-on-5. I also thought the penalty kill, even though Seattle's only regulation goal was scored on the power play, I thought Calgary's penalty kill was a massive plus tonight. They only allowed 2 high danger chances all night on the power play. One of them goes in, but, and for instance, that could have been a big momentum swing. Chandler Stephenson ties it in the second period on a 5-on-3, and the Kraken still had 88 seconds of power play time, 5-on-4 following, because the goal happened at 5-on-3, obviously. Thanks, genius. And so, they still had 88 seconds of power play time, and the Flames shut them down. And that was a real big, wasn't a momentum swing back Calgary's way necessarily, but it did kind of settle things and get things back to even, and allowed the game, the rest of the game, to be scoreless. So that was another positive. I did like their play away from the puck a lot. I liked their penalty kill a lot. I love the backline line. And then, of course, what more can you say about Dan Vladar, who was very, very good tonight? He gets his 3rd start of the season. It's time for the save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. And Dan Vladar's save of the game comes in period at number 1.
And I'm a 2-1-1 the other way. And up the left wing side, Schwartz over to Bjorkstrand, who dangles in, and Vladar stretches out and appears to get a piece of the puck with the tip of his goal stick. to keep it out of his net.
And he did just get a piece of that and keeps it out. And that is Dan Vladar's save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes makes a donation to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com. The better way to build. One of Dan's 21 saves tonight. He made 21 on 23 when it's all said and done. And goaltending continues to be a real positive story for the Flames as well. Vladar continues to get the job done. He's now 2-0-1 to start the year. You can bet Dustin Wolf gets the start on Tuesday against Pittsburgh. He's 2-0, and with his .944 save percentage. So just a lot of positives if you're the Flames, and when it comes to the goaltending position, it's been a really, really positive start to the year in that regard. And, you know, one of those areas that there were a lot of question marks about, and so far those questions have been answered very positively. And again, Vladar's save percentage goes from .880 to .890 with this game tonight. And I still don't think Dan's save percentage is indicative of the way he's played, because let's be honest, the first period against Vancouver was dreadful, goaltender out for Calgary, and that really sewered, especially with a small sample size, really sewered the save percentage for Dan. Since that time, since the first period against Vancouver, he's been clipping it closer to about a 930, if my math is correct, since that first period against Vancouver, including tonight. So quality night for Dan Vladar, and goaltending continues to be a strength for this Flames team as well. Okay, to the text line we go at 960-960. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. And text line now on your Flames Talk post-game show, starting with Cole, who says, feels like I'm the only one that's noticed Kadri's selfish play or the mistakes he makes. In period one, a 2-on-1 on the Flames, he was in reach and quit skating altogether. I thought Kadri had a rough game tonight by his standards. Again, the line was still very, very much in the mix offensively all night long, and I didn't mind the line. I just felt some of Kadri's work with the puck was a little suspect, including the giveaway on the game tying goal, the game winning goal rather, which was just a, you know, lack of, and Kadri very rarely is lacking awareness. He's one of the smartest guys on this team with its hockey IQ, you know, kind of gets stripped and doesn't realize where the pressure's coming from. It felt like next thing you know, it's on Montour's stick, stopped by Vladar, picks up the rebound, back to Eberle, game over. So I thought the line with Kadri, Kuzmenko, and Coronado, positive. I thought some of Kadri's decision-making with the puck on his stick, a little more suspect, but Kadri's been very good for them in the first four games. It happens to everybody, even veterans. Mike from McKenzie Lake says, very little push by the Flames. Only one shot 15 minutes into the third. Not a lot of positives tonight. Some late chances provided some hope. Short-lived hope. I guess they take the point in a game they probably didn't deserve. Felt bad for Vladar on a costly overtime turnover. Again, I saw more positives than perhaps Mike did in this game. Again, I really like their off-puck work. I like their D-zone work, and I like their penalty kill. I like Vladar. So I did think there were some positives in this game, even though they don't pick up the victory. This reads, Kadri cost them the game tonight. He doesn't really want to be here, and he proved that tonight with that sloppy giveaway in their own zone. Very disappointed with overtime. See, I don't know how you can equate Kadri making a mistake in overtime to him not wanting to be here. I don't see that. Everything Kadri has said, everything Kadri has shown on the ice over the last year and a bit suggests to me the exact opposite, that he is invested, he does care, and he does want to be a part of this solution. So do I understand frustration with Nazem on the overtime game, on the overtime winner? Sure, that was a mistake. It happens to everybody, especially at 3-on-3 when mistakes are amplified. But to then equate it that he doesn't want to be here, or to start painting the entire season so far on 91 with that brush, I think's unfair, because I think Kadri's been very good for them for the balance of the five games so far. This from Jeff in Lethbridge, who says, Vladar was a huge positive. This platoon situation with Wolf could prove to be a pretty good combo going forward. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that you'll be seeing Dustin Wolf Tuesday when the Flames end up hosting Pittsburgh to start off a three-game homestand. This one from Chris, who says, Pat, thought the Flames were, for the most part, puck-watching and didn't quite have that jump. Their passes weren't stick-to-stick. Looked like their defense tightened up considerably after the first period, and Vladar played well. I say this knowing it's much easier to critique the issues rather than applaud the execution. This reads, Kadri needs to learn how to pass the puck. You're not going to win every game by yourself or any if you're not that skilled. I don't think Kadri a lot of times gets anywhere near enough credit for how skilled he is. Ash says, as productive as both Kadri and Kuzmenko have been, I still have concerns about their 5-on-5 production after five games. I also wonder if the lack of 5-on-5 production is what Kuzmenko was alluding to when he said he needs to play better rather than his defensive play. Could very well be. He did say that on Friday at Winsport after practice. You know, feels like he needs to play better and could very well be exactly what Ash is talking about, some of his 5-on-5 work. And we'll see. What else we got here at 960. This reads from Rick in Lakeview. Glad they got the point. As in my view, that was their most disjointed game by far. Vladar was stellar and deserved a better team in front of him this evening. A football expression, rusted or rested, following several days off. The Flames looked poor for it. Go get him next game, Flames. Again, Rick in Lakeview. Other thing I want to point out is, yes, they did look disjointed. Yes, they did look sloppy at times. But I do want to point out that Seattle makes a lot of teams look that way. And sometimes we got to credit the other team. And the other team is full marks for the victory on their end, right? Like Seattle played kind of, as Wilsey said, with Mackenzie Weegar, kind of a road game at home. And that's the way Seattle plays it all the time. They did under Dave Hakstol. They've continued that now under Dan Bylsma. And so a game that's in the mud is very much how Seattle is comfortable playing it. This one says, Pat, this loss should not have happened. Three coaches compare notes to put Kadri and Kuzmenko out in overtime. How on earth did they find the rationale to put them out rather than Backlund and Zeri, who won the overtime in Vancouver with a beautiful goal? Instead, Kadri loses the faceoff, which was a massive mistake, and gives the puck away to lose the game. Kadri has a history of this, so what happened with the note comparing? Don't get me wrong, Kadri's a solid player, but not who I would have put out there to secure a win. They'll take the point, but the loss is on the coaches, in my opinion. I don't necessarily agree on that front. They do a lot of work on overtime duos, and they had some success with Kadri and Kuzmenko in a preseason overtime game. That's a duo they're very comfortable with. Did it work tonight? No, it didn't. The Flames didn't even get past the offensive blue line, but that doesn't mean that it was the wrong choice. Like to me, that's more of a confirmation bias thing. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I just disagree with the text myself. I think that's more of a confirmation bias thing where I don't like the way Kadri's playing. How can you put him out there in overtime? You know, they've had success with Kadri in overtime before. So I'm not sure that I'm fully feeling that this loss is on the coaches. Keep the text coming, though, at 960-960. Lots of text still to get to as we roll through your Flames Talk postgame show on this Saturday night. Flames lose 2-1 in overtime on the road in Seattle. Let's get to the phone lines at 403-240-4444. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Pat Steinberg, along with you. Terry is kicking us off on the phone lines tonight following a 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle. What's up, Terry?
Well, good evening, Pat, from Bloomington, Illinois.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, to me, one of the things that was an issue and it was brought up once was the penalties.
Yes.
And the penalties were selfish penalties, especially that too many men on the ice.
It was a mistake, I guess. I mean, I don't know if anybody was like, screw it, we're getting on the ice, we're taking a too many men on the ice penalty. Who cares about my teammates? It was a mistake. It was a poorly timed mistake, but it didn't end up coming back to bite them.
That one didn't. That's absolutely sure. But six penalties. Six.
Yeah, yeah. They took. There's no doubt about it. They took too many penalties. Penalty kill was a positive, but They did take too many penalties. And, you know, we're going to hear from Michael Backlund here pretty shortly. It's the first thing that he says in his post-game thoughts is that, yeah, way too many penalties.
And for me, the third period was more about, and using an old football jargon, playing that prevent defense. And every time you play a prevent defense, it prevents a win.
Yeah, I don't see that. There was a 1-1 game. What were they preventing? I mean, again, Terry, like the way Seattle plays, that's the way they play. They are like Calgary plays it very close to the vest when they're having success. Seattle plays it very close when that's just two teams that play it close to the vest. I didn't see it as a prevent defense. Like it was a 1-1 game. Both teams were playing a really tight hockey game, and Seattle's brand of hockey grinds you into the dirt, and they did tonight.
But they had 11 shots on goal. We only had 6. So that is a big disparity there. We needed to push harder in the third period. You got to overcome that, because that's how teams, if we are lucky enough to make it to the playoffs, that's how teams play in the playoffs. So you got to be willing to push a little harder through adversity.
Well, and but in fairness, in a playoff game, if you can get it to overtime with it being really tight, that sometimes is a win too. I don't know. I feel like maybe you're nitpicking a little bit there, Terry. I mean, shot attempts were 18-18 at 5-on-5 in the third. So I didn't really feel like one team wasn't pushing. It just felt more like that's the style of hockey we were watching tonight.
And Hockey Night in Canada had it 10 shots from the slot for Seattle.
I can only go by what the metrics that I have on Natural Stat Trick, which had 4 at 5-on-5 and 6 overall. The way that Natural Stat Trick does it, they scrub right from NHL data, and a lot of times there'll be one like they had the 6 high dangers, but the 20 medium and high dangers. So a lot of those can kind of be discrepancy calls.
Yeah.
But I still thought the Flames did a nice job away from the puck tonight.
For the most part, yeah, and it's only 5 games in, so we're not going to sell the farm or anything like that. It's too early to do that. Plus, Vladar stood on his head. Let's be honest. This is probably the best starting for Vladar that he's had pretty much ever.
Well, he's never started 3 of the first 5 games in his career in the NHL, and he's been very good.
Yeah, and let's hope it continues. I'll let somebody else talk, so we'll see you next time. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Terry. Be well in Bloomington. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
You bet.
403-240-4444 is your phone number. Flames Talk postgame is underway. Steinberg along with you. Keep the phone calls coming if you want to chat on this Saturday night. Ryan is with us. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, Pat. I'm coming in hot. Just let me start off by saying to Pat there, on a more chipper note, that Bloomington is a short jaunt down the 74 from Champaign, and the Illini picked off Wolverines. But we're here to talk hockey. So just trying to ease the calm there. Earlier you were trying to say stick-to-itiveness.
Yes, stick-to-itiveness.
Not stick-to-itiveness.
I don't. It's,
cool.
It's not a real word, so you can't.
But stick-to-itiveness has been, yeah, I think. You know, I heard that they changed the definition literally, like officially changed it to literally, because people say literally wrong so much that they actually altered the official definition.
Yeah, I try not to use literally in that. Like, I try to use it only when it's the way it's supposed to be.
But you can literally do it now. It's okay.
I literally don't want to.
The not minor league or minor league report. Walker Duehr with a hat trick tonight. Productivity. And Devin Cooley, my Silicon Valley brethren, with his first career shutout.
Yep. It was a solid night again for the Calgary Wranglers, who look a little bit like a wagon to start the year.
They definitely were not the team that ruined my parlay. There was a major team that did, but it's okay. While I'm still breaking the rules, Georgia, Texas, who's number one in the country?
Okay, back on target, Ry. Back on target.
Never been number one. Okay.
Back on target.
Thank you for that. I just wanted to say that I concur with you that it's been made abnormally and unnecessarily clear that Navim is absolutely content to stay in Calgary, like to Coleman and, I mean, McKenzie-style levels. He seems totally dead set to stay and be content. And I would just say, I would point to the OTE versus Vancouver. If you watch the opening faceoff, you see Kadri win a faceoff. It goes to Kuzminko. And then Kuzminko does some athletic spin stuff, but kind of loses it. And Kadri's like, boom, right there, and maintains possession. And that just really impressed me in the moment.
I bet you they start Kadri and Kuzminko the next time they're in overtime. Like, that's a duo that I think they're comfortable with.
Absolutely. I just, Kevin Pahal, all praise. I've been really impressed with him.
Braden Pahal.
I was on a Kevin thing. I don't know what it was. Oh, I was going to ask about Rooney. Braden Ball it is. What do you think about Hanley? Is he going to be kind of like on and off with Mirmanov?
What do you mean?
Like as far as, he doesn't seem, he was a scratch tonight.
Who are we talking about, Hanley or Mirmanov here?
Oh, Hanley, that is.
Well, Hanley's the eight right now. I think it'll take at least one injury, I think, to get Hanley in. Well, or a back to back to get Hanley in. He's eighth on the depth chart as it stands right now. And Barry got in tonight. I thought Barry had some rough stretches in this game. So my guess is Mirmanov will come back in and play on Tuesday. So they've got seven D-men right now that they believe are everyday guys. And that sounds disrespectful to Hanley, but I do think Hanley is the eight right now. But when you've got a number of defensemen that are, team feels like they can play. If you're having kind of an okay stretch like Mirmanov has to start the year, you're going to probably sit a game to get a fresh set of legs like Barry in there tonight. And that's why we saw Bean come out on Sunday. It just, they're going to rotate through some D-men here.
Yeah, and small sample size, of course. And I'd just like to reiterate to the Flames people, not the preface, but I did say before the season started on many of the preseason coverage that he did, that the Flames will make the playoffs. I don't get this. No one that left is any better or was any better last season than their replacements this season. Because, of course, I have full faith in Justin, and Vladar has been amazing. I didn't know that at the time. But anyhow, I don't get it. The talent, Exodus, it doesn't make any sense to me. I think the youth and the lack of distractions of when's this guy going to leave, my Noah panic, everything is it's quite calming and excellent, and I like the energy. In closing, what I was going to ask, just remember that what I was going to say to the fans, Yegor isn't there, and he's our leading scorer and probably will be again. So, So, without Yegor, I think that there's a lot of scoring potential that's currently absent, and they played excellent, and Sam wasn't there either. So, I think that it was fine.
All right.
Anyhow, closing, I will just say enjoy Bucky Irving. He's a great duck. Thank you very much. Love you, Pat.
Bye, Rye. Good to hear from you, buddy. The point that Ryan makes about the injuries, I think, is really important in that, the Flames are, it's been a while. I know they lost Pelche and Rooney last year to start the year. That was both in training camp, actually. But you've got Sharon Govich, who was, to Ryan's point, your leading goal scorer last year, and he misses the start of the season because he sustains a lower body injury late in the preseason finale. Then Rooney gets hurt on his first or second shift of the year in Vancouver. Hanzek gets hurt on Tuesday. The injuries to, pretty especially on the Sharon Govich and Hanzek front, both those guys were on the Kadri line. Sharon Govich was the penned-in guy to start with Kadri and Kuzmenko. He gets hurt in the preseason and isn't able to start the year. Hanzek starts there as a result. Then he gets hurt in game four. That's why Coronado was up there. I thought Matty actually played pretty well. I like Coronado quite a bit on that line tonight, but yeah, they definitely have sustained some injuries, and that has also played into this, which I think makes the 4-0-1 record that much more impressive to start the year. 403-240-4444 is your phone number, as George is with us. What's up, George?
Not much, Patty. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good, man.
Good to hear. Well, all good things come to an end, but it's okay. I was wary about the long break in between games for the Flames, and I really thought this was their sloppiest game of the season thus far. In saying that, they still hung in there.
But do you really, George, think that that had anything to do with the long layoff? Like, I don't. I think this was the game that it was going to be because of the way Seattle plays it too. I just don't think there's enough being talked about. Like, Seattle plays this way. This is the way they play to have success a lot of the times. They suppress a lot of shots. They muck it up in the neutral zone and the defensive zone. Like, this is kind of Seattle cracking hockey.
Oh, no, for sure. And I was going to say that too. But I do feel this was Calgary's sloppiest game of the year too. Like, I didn't think they were very connected. I think out of the five games, they were the least connected tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this or the Chicago game.
Yeah. But in saying that, you know, still, I mean, they got a point out of the game in large part due to Dan Vladar. But, you know, it's what it is. You're not going to win, you know, all of them. And so, and the thing is, they still, like I said, they still worked their butts off. I mean, you can't fault the effort. It was just.
And did you really feel like, Vladar's, like, was, and I thought he played well, don't get me wrong, but did you really feel like he stole this game for Calgary or stole a point for him? I mean, he played well, but again, I thought that they played pretty, I really don't. Like, I thought that the Flames played well away from the puck tonight, too, on top of a solid night for Vladar. Like, I'm just not as down on this game as perhaps you are. I'm not as down on Calgary's performance as you are.
Fair enough. I did, though, like, to say a positive, I thought this was easily Vladar's best game of the season, but it's been his best game I've seen in a long time. I thought he was dialed in. I thought he was pretty smart. Two of the poke checks he made tonight, too, prevented a direct goal, and the other one prevented a scoring chance. I thought he was excellent tonight. I think that hip surgery made a world of difference. I know he didn't want to lose his spot last year, but in retrospect, I think maybe it would have been the best thing to get it done earlier. That's just my opinion. I don't want to speak for the individual, obviously, but
that was kind of the way that the way that it was kind of planned out by the Flames was that, you know, when it became pretty clear that the year was going to get away from them because they had made all their trades and guys were out the door. You're like, okay, we kind of see where things are going here. They decided to shut Vladar down. They had a pretty good idea even then, George, when they shut Dan down on March 12th. They were, I would suggest that the Flames were about 99% that Jacob Markstrom wasn't going to be back even in March of last year. There was a very clear understanding that Jacob was likely going to be elsewhere if a trade could be made in the summertime. So all of a sudden you start thinking big picture, and they had been talking about Dan about when to do this for quite some time. Trade deadline had passed. Tanev and Lindholm and Hanifin had all been dealt, and things were starting to sink in that they probably weren't going to make the playoffs by March 12th. It was pretty clear they weren't going to. And so you shut down Dan, get him the surgery. It allowed them to get his rehab done through the summer and have him ready for the start of training camp, which he was. Timing worked perfectly. It also allowed Dustin Wolf to come up and split time with Jacob Markstrom. So it was always kind of telegraphed that way, and it ended up working out really well for both the player and the team, because you're right. He looks like a very, very different goaltender in three games, if you can go back to the preseason as well, in the games that he's played since the hip surgery.
Yeah, for sure. And it's cool that we're having this conversation even five games in, because I think one of the biggest worries, if you will, especially from people outside the team, was, oh, their goaltending is going to be a problem. And it's been anything but. It's actually been a plus through five games, but both goalies, both Wolf and Vladar.
Sorry, say that again, George. Connor was just talking in my ear there for a second.
Oh, no worries. I was just complimenting the goaltending tandem. A lot of people outside of the Flames organization, you know, the big thing was, oh, their goaltending isn't going to hold up. Now, again, five games in, I get it. But, like, you can't complain about the goaltending. I really think you can't. I mean, I thought both have been excellent right now. And I think the rotation's working out wonderfully.
It's been a real strength for him.
Yeah, it has.
And you take out Dan's first period against Vancouver, he's clipping along at about a 9:30. Dustin's sitting at a 9:44. They've been solid. Have they been the best goalies in the league? No. Have they given the team an opportunity to win in all five games? 100% they have. Even after Dan's, and it wasn't just Vladar, even after that dreadful first period Calgary played in Vancouver, Vladar shut the door, didn't allow another goal until JT Miller tied it. And he shut the door in Edmonton after Jeff Skinner scored early on, didn't allow another goal, period, and was pretty darn good tonight, as we know. So, and obviously, Dustin Wolf's two home starts have been dynamite. So, no, goaltending's been a real positive for him.
For sure. I have a final comment, my friend. I'll let you get on to other callers.
Yeah.
I love Nazem Kadri. He's a very important part of this team. He's a veteran presence, all that, a leader, no doubt. But one criticism I have of him, and it's not just this year, but it seems more apparent this year, his proclivity to be like a one-man show and do everything himself, and he did it several times tonight, and in overtime it happened to cost him the extra point. And it's not a big deal. It's not like I'm angry about it or anything. But I think he needs to calm that, like, the whole I'm Nathan MacKinnon thing down a little bit, because he's not. And he's gotten himself and the team in trouble a few times because of it.
Naz is a guy that really likes to have the puck, and he likes to possess the puck. And sometimes what you're talking about, I think, does end up happening. And he's a very skilled player, and a lot of times him doing that works out. Like, he's a very good entry man. He's very good one-on-one, but sometimes he doesn't win that battle. And I think maybe sometimes in tight games like this, where you feel like you need to do that one extra thing because it is so tight out there, maybe sometimes that leads to decisions that he wouldn't make otherwise. Because I'm right, I did see that tonight. I haven't seen a lot of that or enough of it to be an issue prior to tonight. And that's, you know, Nazem's 33, 34 years old. He's closing in on 1,000 NHL games. Like, we're not talking about a guy who is all of a sudden going to drastically change the way he plays. He's a cup winner. He's going to hit 1,000 games in the NHL because of what makes him a good player. And as much as sometimes strengths can be double-edged swords in this league, I mean, his desire to have the puck and his desire to possess the puck the way that he does is part of what's gotten him here. So I don't know if that's something that we're ever going to be seeing change in a dramatic way, if that makes any sense. Like, he's 34 years old now. Yeah. He's got 908 NHL games.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Like I said, we're five games in. There's a lot of season to go. But, like, you can't win or lose. You can't, as a Flames fan right now, I mean, they're giving it what they got. They're playing as a team. That's all you can ask for, right? So, still happy, even with the loss.
All right, Georgie, be well, brother. We will talk to you soon.
Sounds good, my friend. Take care.
Thanks, George. 403-240-4444 is your phone number. Following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle, as our Flames Talk postgame show continues on this Saturday night, we say hello to Ahmad. What's going on, Ahmad? Welcome to the program.
Hey, Pat.
What's happening?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good.
How's your mind? What do you think about the game today?
I thought they battled hard. I thought that they ran into a Seattle team that makes it very difficult to generate offense, and they found a way to get a point. They're still off to a really nice start to the season.
Nice, man. You I see the Cervelli was saying, you know, they're in on Sandman.
Yes.
You think it'd be a good idea to bring Lindholm back?
No, Ahmad, he just signed a massive deal in Boston.
Yeah, but like now he's signed. Like he has, the kid don't have a choice. You know, he has to play for the team.
Ahmad, why would Boston trade him after signing him in free agency?
Yeah, it's a valid point. He just he hasn't played good so far, you know, early on.
I think Ahmad, if they're looking for a center iceman, you're probably looking at somebody under the age of 25, and probably not somebody on a 7-year deal like that.
What do you think about Shane Pinto? He seemed like he'd be a good
fit. That one's a better fit. That fits the age range a little bit better. I believe he's a right shot, which fits the need of the organization a little bit better. So that one fits a whole lot more. Now, whether or not Ottawa is going to be willing to move on from a guy like that, I don't know. But he's a right shot center who's 23 years old. He'll be 24 next month, but fits the age range, fits the need. Like Shane Pinto would be far more of an interesting pickup. I don't think Elias Lindholm is the direction they're leaning.
I think, you know, because like, I think you have to give up quite a bit to get like Pinto, and I think Ottawa needs like a veteran sentiment. So like if you trade like Backlund or something,
I don't
think
they're trading their maybe captain, a pick Ahmad.
To get Pinto.
Ahmad, I don't think Backlund and a pick's going to get him though. Like they're going to have to give up a lot to bring in a player like that.
Oh, it seemed like they kind of sour on him after, you know, like the whole him and like the gambling and the Mike and the Mellies.
Again, I'm not saying it's a bad target. I think that there's a lot of wisdom of getting that type of player, whether it's Pinto or somebody else in that same conversation. Younger, NHL games, right shots, a nice little addition to the conversation too.
You think they could throw in like that? The guy, I don't remember his name, but they drafted from the Ottawa 67s, the defenseman in there. You know, he's a good player. He's a good defenseman.
I don't know who you're talking about. You mean like the Flames just drafted?
Yeah, the Flames took.
Oh, you're thinking you're thinking about Henry Muse.
Yeah, he plays in Ottawa. You know, they probably got a good eye on him. So like, you know, he might push the needle.
Again, I don't know what a trade like that would look like, Ahmad. I just think that it would be a nice pickup. If they're looking to bring in a center iceman, which I think that they would be, then a guy like Pinto would fit the need, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Good question for you. You like Miami tomorrow for football?
Not particularly.
You don't see that one could be an upset or something, you know?
I'm usually not on the Dolphins just because of their quarterback situation right now. So I would say I like the Colts at home. So that would be where I'm at. I appreciate the call, brother. You have yourself a great night.
Yeah, you too, Pat.
Thank you, man. What else we got? One more call before we head back inside the Flames locker room. I do like Elias Lindholm. No, I don't think that's a very likely scenario. I don't know Ottawa's desire in making a move like that. But if the Flames were to be targeting a young center, a guy like Shane Pinto would definitely fit the bill in that regard. 403-240-4444 is your phone number. Let's say hello to Anand on the Flames Talk post-game show tonight. What's up, Anand?
Good evening, Patty. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Yeah, happy Saturday evening to you. Hope you're doing well. I think a decent game they played overall. I think I agree with most of the points you have said. But there were some out of syncing that I saw from the players. A couple of questions for you. I will keep it short and sweet. First of all, how did you like the new pairing we had tonight? So that and Barry.
Did not love that pairing. I thought Barry struggled for different stretches tonight. So I didn't love that pairing tonight. And I thought Barry had, you know, a roughish night out there. I thought I got better as the night went along. And I thought Barry settled in as the night went along. I didn't love Barry in the first period into the second, but I did think he and Uyghur settled in together as the night went along.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I thought the same too. Yeah, Barry had struggles. And they struggled out there. My second question for you, I know it's too early to talk about call-ups and all that, but down in the HL, I know Walker Duher had an amazing game tonight. Jacob Pelche is doing well, and even Rory Kearns. Do you think, do you believe any of those three can get a call-up anytime soon?
By the way, Duer had 3 goals and 4 points in a 4-0 win over Henderson. Devin Cooley had the shutout. I mean, there would have to be more injuries. Like right now, they're Sharon Govich is hurt, Hanzek's hurt. They've got Kirkland up already. Rooney's pretty close to returning, and they're only rolling with 13 forwards because they've got 8D on the NHL roster. So there would have to be another injury. And I think a guy like Duer, who's played lots of NHL time, would be a possibility. I think a guy like Pelche would be a possibility. I know Rory Kearns is off to a great start down there. I don't think he would be the guy that would be getting the first call. I think that he needs more time in the American League just to continue playing at a higher pace, which, credit to him, he's done a nice job in early on this season. So it would have to be injury-related, but I think that Duer and Pelche would both be guys who would be considered for sure. If they needed a center iceman, they'd probably look towards Morton. So there'd be some guys down there that they would definitely look at.
All right, and then you said Sharangovich and Rooney is coming up soon. How soon can Sharangovich return? Do you have any update?
Not really, no. I mean, he hasn't started skating with him yet, so still a little bit away. He was week to week. We're now approaching 2 weeks into Calgary season. So, you know, we're probably getting into the stage where it's not too far off from him starting to skate with them again. Rooney's ready to return, I think, at any point now. They'll probably activate him off of IR in the next day or two. Whether or not he gets back into the lineup, we'll see. But Rooney coming off of IR is something that would happen first. Sharangovich hasn't skated yet, at least not with the team. So a little further off, but didn't sound like it was super serious when the injury happened in the preseason. Like, obviously enough to keep him out of the start of the season, but not something that needed surgery.
All right, sounds good. And final question, talking about goaltending tandem, I know Wolves starts at home, but we have Pittsburgh Penguins coming on Tuesday. What do you think of goaltending sets, Vladar or Wolf?
Wolf. I think that they've just alternated so far. And at this point, they probably keep doing that, especially if they're if both guys are giving them opportunities to win. I thought Vladar was very good tonight. Wolf's been very good. So I think you go Wolf against Pittsburgh. You probably go Vladar on Saturday and Wolf against Winnipeg. Like, you could keep flip flopping between these two guys for a little while here.
Yeah, fair enough. Good point. All right, thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate you answering my questions. Have a good night and talk to you on Tuesday.
Thank you, Anna. Be well, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Take it. Bye.
Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444 following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss in Seattle. This is your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Pat Steinberg along with you on this Saturday night. And time to go back inside the Flames locker room as the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime. They do not set a new franchise record by starting 5-for-5 out of the gates, but 4-0-1, you'll definitely take that. Let's hear from the captain. Here's Michael Backlund post-game inside the Flames locker room.
Tight game, fast-paced game, but it's going to be hard to win games when we take down 9 penalties. And both power play scored, but we just lost our momentum in the second with too many penalties. And that's, I think, I thought the game got away a little bit from us, but I thought we played was pretty decent in the third. Had some looks, but yeah, tight game overall.
It seemed like maybe the last six or seven minutes there, you were really starting to push, had a lot of good looks. Is that kind of how you guys felt, like maybe it's a pretty good chance to win that game?
Yeah, like you said, I thought first 10 of the third was tight, and then I thought, we had some momentum there and had some looks and just couldn't get it in. And then, yeah, OT was a tough balance. But at the end of the day, we know we can play better, and also, you know, if we want to win, we got to stay out of the box.
I mean, some lessons maybe in this game early on in the season, just in terms of the discipline side of it?
Yeah, for sure. It's hard when you... It's hard for, especially guys who don't get to play much. You know, they sit on the bench for a while, and you just lose that rhythm when you take a lot of penalties. You create momentum for the other team, so we know that, and we got to just bounce back the next game.
quick thought on your goaltender and what he did give you in those times where you were down a man at tip and nose.
Yeah, I know. It was really solid for us tonight. He made some really big saves. They had some Aldman rushes that he made some really big saves as well. So, yeah, he played really solid for us tonight.
That is Captain Michael Backlund post-game tonight in Seattle. He picks up an assist as part of a 2-1 overtime loss to the Seattle Kraken. Okay, full lines are open, 403-240-4444. Text line open, 960-960. If you want to chat on this Saturday night, give us a call. Or if you want to fire a text and keep them coming as well at 960-960. Tonight's game has been brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. Flames Talk post-game's available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and more. And of course, live right here. This is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk postgame show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Following a 2-1 overtime loss for the Flames in Seattle, Calgary sustains their first L of the season, but it's an OTL, so they still pick up the 1 point. Not of a possible 10 to start the year for the Flames, and they've got an opportunity. Now, I know that this is is six games. Six games not the sexiest demarcation point ever, but if the Flames win Tuesday against Pittsburgh, that'll be their best six-game start in franchise history. So while they weren't able to set a new franchise record by winning five in a row out of the gates, they do have an opportunity to go 5-0-1 in their first six games, which would be a new franchise record. Their best six-game start prior to that was 2 years ago when they went 5-1-0 out of the gate. So we'll see. We'll see what they can do against Pittsburgh as we continue along. It's Steinberg along with you. Last call for phone calls. So if you want to jump in, now's the time to do so. 403-240-4444. Or the text line remains open at 960-960. Got a couple of lines open. So last call for phone calls if you want to chat with us on this Saturday night. Let's go back to Seattle for the final time and back inside the Flames dressing room for the final time. Rasmus Anderson spoke post-game following a 2-1 overtime loss.
It's a hard-working team. I didn't love our puck play today. I thought we were a little sloppy with that. They're playing similar style to us. They're working hard and So you got to really manage the pucks, and I thought we had a little bit too many turnovers, and just sloppy play with the puck.
Did you feel that was pretty consistent through the night, or were there stretches that were kind of
No, I think it was pretty consistent through the night. I still think we defended really well, and their goal comes on a 5-on-3. So, other than that, I away from the puck, I think we were pretty good, but with the puck, I think we could have been way better.
Well, Mike Holvis obviously mentioned the penalties too in the second and maybe taking a little bit of the rhythm out of the game. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, that's, a team that gets them, obviously gets momentum, and they get to play with the puck. And we spent a lot of time defending and killing, and that's just the way the games go sometimes. But I think we did a good job. As I said, I don't know how many power plays they have, but their one goal comes on a 5-on-3.
Yeah. Final, I think maybe 6 or 7 minutes there, though, in the third, it felt like you guys really started to...
Yeah, last 4 or 5 minutes, we had some looks. That's usually how it is in a 1-1 game. The team that plays with the puck, it's going to feel like they have a little bit of more pressure. That was a good stretch with 4 or 5 minutes, but... not good enough with the puck tonight.
Last one for you, and that's just what you got out of your goaltender here tonight.
Yeah, really good. I love Vladdy's game. He battled, hard game for him. Not a whole lot of shots, and then a bunch of power plays, and then not a whole lot of shots, and then a bunch of power plays again. So, tricky night for him, but he played outstanding.
There you go. Rasmus Anderson post-game, our final look inside the Flames locker room this evening. Back to the text line we go at 960-960, and we say hello to Chad, who writes, that looked like the team everyone was expecting to start the year. Mantha was the worst player on the ice. Kadri was awful. Barry was horrendous. I feel bad for the fans that paid to watch that game. Calgary really looked like a team lacking a true star player tonight. I know they have had a bit of success in the power play, but sometimes it's actually uncomfortable to watch him struggle. Lucky to get a point. Hopefully they can continue the point streak. See, Chad, I wasn't anywhere near as down on their game tonight. Seattle's a very similar team. Deep forward ranks, decent blue line, And they play very similar to Calgary. Sometimes styles clash. Did I think Calgary was great with the puck tonight? No. I thought that there were some lines that weren't as strong offensively as they would need to be. But I thought generally it was a decent road game for the Flames, and they found a way to get a single point. I really wasn't as down on the game as perhaps Chad was there. This one from Trent in BC. Pat, I think overall this team is better than 04. Patrick Waugh, Mike Vernon, Marty Brodeur, and Kiprusoff all had that early career success. If memory serves, 1986 was a battle of rookie goalies. If Wolf hits his potential, sky's the limit. If the tandem each play over 500 hockey, they'll likely be playoff bound. I have trouble comparing anything to the 04 season. That was just such a magical, once-in-a-lifetime, lightning-in-a-bottle thing. But I will say, they've had a nice start to the season. They're playing hockey that is fun to get behind if you're a Flame, and I still think they're full marks for a 4-0-1 start. This from Spencer says, thoughts on Zeri's fit with Coleman and Backlund and him as a center this year. Personally, I'd like to see their most talented young player who played center when he was drafted play center. Nothing to lose, everything to gain. And I do think that there is a possibility as things go along that we do see Zeri at center. However, I think Zeri's been very good on that line with Backlund and Coleman. You know, I know there's this worry that because of the tough minutes that they play, the Backlund line always plays tough minutes. Like tonight, their offensive zone start ratio is 22%. They barely started in the offensive end as per usual. I know that there's a feeling that, well, you put a skilled guy like Zeri with Coleman and Backlund, he's not going to be able to create. Well, he's a point per game player through the first five games, got 5 points in five games. And I don't know, I've quite liked Zeri's fit there because you've got a driver in Backlund, you've got just a fundamentally sound player in Coleman. Zeri can be like the dynamic guy on that line, and I think generally he has been. Plus, he's getting number one power play time. I don't know. I've had no problem with that trio so far. Now, if all of a sudden things start going stale, or if all of a sudden the Flames start struggling and the forward units start not getting the job done at 5-on-5, I do think a move to center for Zeri is something that's possible, especially if Pospisil and that line don't continue to play well. I did not like the Pospisil line at all tonight with Mantha and Huberdeau, and so if that maybe goes downhill a little bit, well, then there's a scenario where maybe they think about moving Zeri to the middle at some point. This reads, Pat, what do you think of Ball tonight? I wasn't a huge fan of getting him instead of Mercer or Hultz in the Markstrom trade, but have been pleasantly surprised so far. He seems steady and his reach is huge. Handles the puck like a grenade sometimes, though. First of all, I don't think Hultz or Mercer were on the table in the Markstrom trade, especially if a first-round pick was going to be coming back the other way. That would be number one. Number two, I thought of the five games, Ball was maybe the least impressive tonight that he has been, and yet I still thought he was fine. I think Ball and Anderson have been their best pairing so far. And yeah, Ball's been, I think, good with the way that he has defended. He's not like a super imposing physical presence overall, but he does play physical just because of how big he is. But I think that he's actually generally been pretty good to start the year. I think that he's been a nice addition. I think that he's helped Anderson be a little bit more free, take a few more chances, just because you can be pretty sure that Ball is going to be back there. So generally, I've liked Ball. I thought he's been pretty sound so far to start the year. This one from Liz in McKenzietown says, I think Kadri got frustrated when he took the penalty, and then he tries to do it all himself, which doesn't always work. They battled hard, and it was a fun game to watch. Keep it up, guys. This reads, Pat, tough but good loss tonight with positives. I take exception to Kadri being the brunt of the blame. The team should have lost in regulation. It was a mistake. He has 4 points in five games and is plus four. He's not checked out and is a large part of the reason for the team's current success. I do agree with that sentiment quite a bit. And honestly, yes, Kadri made a mistake in overtime, but he's been very good for them to start the year. This from Joel in Cranston, who says, Pat, if Tampa can part with Stamkos, the Flames can part with Backlund. The only reason Backlund's still here is he played for Huska in Kelowna. Yeah, I don't agree with that. He's the captain, first of all. Second of all, he's under contract. He wants to be here. I don't know. I don't. And I also, that is in, that's in relation to a caller earlier suggesting that Backlund would be traded for Shane Pinto. I don't think a 35-year-old center is going to be the main part going back to another team in a trade for a 23, soon to be 24-year-old center. That was more the thing that I was pushing back on, Joel. Less that we're talking about him being untouchable. More that I just don't think Backlund would be the main piece going back in a trade for a guy like Pinto. And Tampa didn't so much part, they didn't trade Stamkos, they just didn't re-sign him, and he left to go to Nashville. What else we got here at 960-960? Jordan in Mahogany says, why all the Kadri hate? It doesn't make sense. He's constantly been one of their best players. One mistake doesn't define a player. Plus, Vladar played great. Have a good night. What else we got here at 960-960 on this Saturday night? Greg writes, good grief, Flames fans. Step back from the ledge, bank the point, and look forward to Tuesday. It's an 82-game season, and they just finished Game 5 without a loss in regulation. Enjoy the ride and have a beer or whatever. That comes from Greg in Varsity. PPS, I would swap 96 back to right and 27 to left on the Kadri line and put 91 and 96 back to left right shot and then open 27 up for a one-timer from Kuzmenko if they get an odd man rush. I understand they want to insulate Coronado, but he already showed he can adjust to different situations like he did playing two games on the fourth line. By the way, trade Rasmus for Dawson Mercer. Money similar, and it will finally get Mercer to the Flames to make me happy. PPS, Rasmus is my favorite Flame, so I don't say this lightly. This reads, leave Kadri alone. He's been one of their best players for better than a year. Mistakes happen, and he was looking for a breakout that didn't happen, but he was thinking the right way at 3-on-3. What else we got here at 960-960 on this Saturday night? This from Parsons. Pat, your thoughts on Maverick Bork, and with Dallas wanting to go deep this year, he might not fit. Would you move Anderson for Bork plus? Right now, probably not. I would not be moving Anderson right now. If I had the choice, I'd be looking to re-sign him. Would Maverick Bork be a nice fit, though, and something that could possibly pop up closer to the trade deadline if Dallas were looking for somebody on Calgary's side? Sure. And if the Flames were to go to try to get Bork out of Dallas, I'd be interested to see what those conversations were like. But would I be shopping Rasmus Anderson myself right now? No, I would not. Others think differently. But I for what the Flames are trying to do here and for when they want to be at their end point, I don't know. I think Rasmus Anderson is going to be a part of that, or should be a part of that if he wants to be. Now, obviously, this is all very different if Rasmus isn't interested in re-signing, but he's got a year left on his contract, and I feel like those conversations, in my eyes, don't start until the summertime. This reads, hello, hockey fans. Well, not what they wanted or what Vladar deserved. Tough not seeing the fourth line, but happy to get a point. Question for you, Pat. With the Wranglers playing as of late, maybe more farm players up and down, Klapka for Pelche, or give Rory Karens a shot. Thanks for everything, Pat. Your attention to detail and passion for Calgary is fantastic. This says Wolf for Calder. On the American League front, I think Klapka on the fourth line for now makes sense. If he starts to tail off, he does not have to clear waivers. So you could always send him back to the American League if that ends up happening. And then maybe it is a Pelche, or maybe it is somebody else. I think Rory Karens is a guy that more high leverage American League time is important for him. He's off to a great start, but I do think some more time in the American League, learning more and more how to get his pace a little bit higher, is going to be big for him. And then maybe Karens later on this season if they need a recall, or maybe you wait until next season. Like, it doesn't have to be rushed right now. I think that you can let this play out. I mean, Rory Kerens is having American League success at this level for the first time. He had decent success last year at different times, finished with 32 points in his first American League season. But now he's off to 8 points in 4 games to start the year. But let this play out. Let him build some confidence. I don't think an NHL recall right now on the Kerens front is something that you need to be rushing through. So there you go. There's just a little bit of the text line tonight at 960. Thanks for, and Ashley in Calgary says, have a great night. Love all the Flames talk. Thanks for listening, Ashley. Love to have you aboard. 960, always on the text line. And now a few more phone calls following tonight's 2-1 overtime loss to the Seattle Kraken. It's your Flames Talk postgame show on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. My name is Pat Steinberg. Let's say hello to Randy on the phone line. What's up, Randy?
How's it going, Pat?
Good. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I guess I was just calling to have a chat about quick three things. One, when you were talking about, and you talked about the thoughts on Flames talk, when you're talking about when Conroy is trying to target players like in a certain age group, is Kevin Ball not one of those guys? Is he not 23? Like
actually, that's a really good point. Yep, absolutely.
Not one that you mentioned.
I should have mentioned him because you're bang on, but yes, absolutely. Similar idea. He's 24 years old. So again, fits the age range. They got a first round pick in the Markstrom trade as well, but you know, again, similar to the deal with New Jersey for Toffoli, where they got Sharon Govich, or I think Grushnikov fits into that mix in the Tanev trade. Yes, absolutely, and that's just an oversight on my part. I think Kevin Ball absolutely would fit that same thing in terms of, you know, as the Flames try to retool this group and get younger. Yes, they want draft picks. Yes, they want prospects, and they've got those. They got Brustevich, they got Yermo, they got Parekh, and they got, you know, Basha and Gridden and all that type of stuff, either by trade or by drafting them. But the other part of it that I know Craig Conroy is very adamant about wanting to bring in is younger NHLers. Again, think under 25, and Kevin Ball absolutely fits that. So, no, that's a very good point.
Oh, okay. And I've also found him to be an excellent defenseman, though he might not have an offensive upside too high, but I mean, I appreciate a good defenseman, to be honest with you.
And honestly, he never has been a guy with a lot of offensive upside, even going back to his time in the Ontario League. He was never really a guy with a ton of offensive upside. He's more of a big, steady guy on the defensive side of things.
Exactly. The second one, and you were talking about this earlier on in the year, and you were worried about them signing Tyson Berry for a bunch of different reasons. Some of it had to do with the AHL and such. But to be honest with you, especially after tonight, I have no idea why they signed that man. Now, don't get me wrong, Miramanov has not been great, but Berry was really rough. And if you put him with Uyghur, you've got to be pretty darn good, or otherwise it's not helping us.
Yeah, and I mean, the main reason that I was, I don't know, worried is the wrong word, but the main reason that I had some reservations on them signing Barry was almost entirely because of the logjam it then exacerbates when it comes to the system on the blue line. So now, you know, all of a sudden, now you've got 7, and they don't want to send Hanley down either, so you've got 8 on the NHL roster, but it sends Tenorti to the American League. Aspero's back healthy, so now you've got 2 veterans in the American League on top of all the prospects, where they've got the 6 prospects as well. They've got Yermo, they've got Solovyov, they've got Brustevich, they've got Grushnikov, and they got Poirier, and I'm missing one other one off the top of my head, but they've got the 6 prospect defense. Oh, and Kuznetsov. So they got the 6 prospect defensemen, and they all need to play. Like, you want them playing regularly for development, but you've also got veterans. And so by signing Barry, it meant that a guy like Tenorti had to go to the American League. And I understand from a hockey perspective why they signed Barry, because he does, I think he will help them on the power play down the road. That is his skill set. I didn't mind him against Edmonton. I did not like him a lot tonight against against Seattle. I thought he got better as the night went along, but didn't see a lot from him on the power play. Couple of unnecessary icings, couple of defensive zone miscues. So I did not love Barry tonight, but you know that they've signed him, and so he definitely is a guy that they're going to want to work into the mix.
Fair enough, yeah. This particular game, it was a tough game to watch, but I think you're probably right in the way you say that part of it is a clash of styles. The Seattle plays kind of the same way. Like, you could call it a tough or boring, you could call it whatever you wanted to, but I mean, the fact that they got a point out of it isn't such a bad thing. I think that people are thinking that it was a disaster, but really considering the circumstances, it wasn't terrible.
I did not think they played horribly tonight. I did not think it was their best game either. But they're 4-0-1 to start the year. Like, you gotta find ways to scratch points out of games sometimes.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think. Anyways, and that's all I have for you, Pat.
All right, Randy. You have yourself a great night, man.
You too, buddy.
Appreciate it. Let's say hello to Mike on the program tonight. What's going on, Mike? Mike, are you there?
Hello. Hey, Pat. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I got a couple of positive things I would like to talk about tonight.
Yes.
First of all, I love how Coach Huska has the team. I feel like the team is truly bought in and playing hard. And I feel like we haven't seen that in a long time.
I agree. I think it was something that we saw right from the get-go last year as well, Mike. And it's something that has carried over very nicely into this season.
Also, one person in particular I really do want to shout out is Jonathan Huberdeau. He's come into camp looking lighter, looking quicker. And he just, you know, Pat, it just looks like he's having fun with hockey again. And that's refreshing to see from someone who has just looked down. He got the big contract, and he felt the pressure, new environment, and it just looked like he was playing with the weight of the world on his shoulders. But it's nice to see him looking like he's playing with nothing to lose, because really, after his last two seasons with Calgary, what the hell does he have to lose? So it's refreshing to see that.
Agreed. And I did not love Huberdeau tonight. I thought that line with him, Mantha, and Pospisil struggled for a lot of this game tonight. But generally, yeah, it's been a really positive start to the year for Huberdeau. He's got 6 points in 5 games. He's been dynamic at times. And I think that you're right. I think, you know, both kind of literally and figuratively, you're right. Because he came in, and we hear this all the time, is like the best shape of my life. But apparently it was a very different training regimen for Jonathan this summer. So that, I think, plays into it. And I also think the other part about him being lighter, I think you're bang on, and it's something that I had said a little bit, and I really do believe leading into the season is, you know, could this be a year where, because the last two seasons have gone the way they have, to your point, and because the expectations on Jonathan individually are going to be lower than maybe they ever have been in his career based on those two seasons, and the fact that the expectations and the spotlight on the team going to be way less than they have been over the last number of years, could this all translate into something that could be conducive for a bounce back or close to bounce back season for Huberdeau? It's early. It's 6 games, but he definitely has had a nice start to the year. So I think that you could very well be onto something.
No, absolutely, Pat. Completely agree with everything you said. And then I do have one more shout out before I want to get to some more constructive things that I saw, you know, not only on tonight, but throughout the whole season to date. So the last quick shout out I have is Roger. He was a epic call in from the Edmonton Calgary game.
Yes, I did not hear, but I have heard about. I did not hear it, but I heard about it.
It was awesome. The guy was the captain of 6 championship teams. And Roger, if you're listening, you were fantastic. Anyways, moving on quickly. Pat, I'm not trying to be confrontational here, but one thing I will say is I do think you and Wes and your team are giving a little bit of, no, not a little bit, way too much credit to Dan Vladar. He looks like he is battling out there. And I get he's coming off major hip surgery, but he looks like he's playing street hockey out there. He's battling the puck. It looks like he is just ugly. And I think the prospect of trading him is just unimaginable. He's making $2.2 million, and he is a hideous goaltender who I think needs to play less. I think if you look at Wolf, he's proven he is the better of the two, and I'd like to hear your take on that.
I'm not anywhere near as down on Vladar as you are. I do think if you were to ask me who's been the better of the two through the regular season start and through training camp, I would agree with you that I would also say Wolf, but I am not as down on Dan and the way that he's played. I guess I kind of see what you're saying about at times he can, or at least tonight I've seen this. I definitely didn't see this in Edmonton, but at times he can make saves look a little bit more exciting than they need to. But we're also talking about a guy who's coming off hip surgery and all that type of stuff. I'm nowhere near as down on Vladar as you are, or I'm not going to be as critical on him through the first 3 starts this season, because I think he's generally been a positive thing for him. But that's, we can agree to disagree on that one.
And I mean, like, I've had hip surgery too, and I've won 3 championships post-surgery. So I can relate to, you know, his hip surgery as well.
Three championships, you know, playing what?
Equivalent hockey to Vladar.
You've won 3 Stanley Cups.
Pretty much. I just don't have a ring.
Huh. Okay, Mike, that seems really believable. We were talking to Mike, the 3-time Stanley Cup champion right there. I don't know if he was trolling, but I didn't want to get into an argument. I think he's made his point. Let's say hello to Clyde. What's going on, Clyde?
Hello, Pat. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am great. I just have 3 things I think I'd like to ask and talk to you about.
Absolutely.
Okay, so number one, I just want to say I appreciate you and your whole team, because I think you guys are doing a great job with these post-game shows.
Well, appreciate it.
And I really enjoy listening to them. And, I just want to say thank you for putting effort into this.
Well, no problem. I'm happy to. Always.
Yeah, and then another thing I wanted to talk about is how do you think our defense has been holding out this season so far?
Generally good. I think it's been a positive. It's been a positive start in that regard for the Flames. I think that they not everybody has been at the same level, but I think the level that Weegar and Anderson have been playing at is very strong. I think Ball has been a nice addition for them through 5 games. I think Pahal has really stepped up and seized an opportunity nicely and has put himself in a really nice spot. Like, his role is set. He is your 3rd pairing right side D, and he's played well. I thought Bean has been okay. Miramanov's been okay. Barry's been okay. But I think generally as a group of 7, they've gotten the job done. And again, they have not, they don't give up a whole lot, you know?
Yeah, I would agree.
So I think generally they've been
quick thing
generally been good. Continue, sorry.
Would you say that the 3rd period wasn't as great as the first 2 were today?
I think that the 3rd was it looked like to me? Looked like a team that was, or 2 teams that were playing really close to the vest and didn't want to make too many mistakes. So I honestly, yeah. I didn't really feel like Calgary's game was all that, like there was a ton of variance in their game at any point from the first, second, or third period. Like I felt that it was a pretty, on both sides, the way they played was pretty steady across the board. Now, it wasn't as good a third period as some of their other third periods have been, but I didn't feel like it was a big drop from the first two, at least in my eyes.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I'm not going to say people are overreacting, but I think like it. We've won four in a row. We were going to lose at some point. Like we weren't going to go 82-0.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, they still found a way to scratch a point out of this one, and they will lose in regulation at some point, and they will lose multiple games in regulation this year. I mean, every team does. Look, it was going to end at some point. They fought hard tonight. Was not a perfect game, but they still got a point. And 4-0-1 for this group out of the gates is pretty positive.
Yeah, I would agree, especially what people were saying about them. Anyway, I just wanted to say quick things. Thank you, Pat.
Okay,
have
Clyde.
Have a great night. Get home safe.
Call back anytime, man.
Okay, sounds good.
Appreciate the call. Thank you, Clyde. That will wrap us up on the phone lines tonight. That'll wrap us up on the text line tonight as the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Seattle Kraken. Unable to set a new franchise record for win streak to start a season. They started 4-0, now 4-0-1. Had they won tonight, would have been the first time ever they went 5-for-5 out the gates. But 4-0-1, not bad. Hard-fought game on both sides tonight in Seattle. As we start to move towards the conclusion of our Flames Talk postgame show tonight, it's time for the final summary as the Flames never trailed in this game because they opened the scoring at the 19:52 mark of the first period. Power play goal from Blake Coleman. Coleman's first of the year from Michael Backlund, and the Flames had a 1-0 lead after 20 minutes of play. Second period, Calgary got into penalty trouble, and Seattle made them pay on a 5-on-3. Chandler Stephenson ties the game at 12:25, his first of the year and first as a member of the Kraken. And Stevenson from Jared McCann and Jaden Schwartz at 12:25. We had a 1-1 tie after 40 minutes of play. No scoring in the third period. Off to overtime we went. Seattle wins the opening faceoff. They bring it into the offensive zone, reload, come back, and giveaway from Nazem Kadri leads to the game-winning sequence. Eventually, Jordan Eberle scores the game winner 47 seconds into the extra frame. Eberle from Brandon Montour gets the game to its 2-1 overtime conclusion. Final shots were 23-21 in favor of Seattle. Calgary 1-for-3 on the power play tonight. Seattle 1-for-6 with the man advantage. Your 3 stars tonight in the building. Number 3, Dan Vladar. Number 2, Joey Decord. And your number 1 star with the game winner, Captain Jordan Eberle of the Seattle Kraken. Hardest working Flame as selected by Megan Mickelson tonight was Dan Vladar. With the loss, Flames fall to 4-0-1. They're back in action Tuesday at home to Pittsburgh, while Seattle improves to 4-2-0. They're back in action Tuesday at home to Colorado. That is your final summary. And now for everyone involved in Flames hockey tonight, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, and for our outstanding producer, Connor Gronsdahl, my name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up on our Flames Talk postgame show, which is available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. As I mentioned, next up for the Flames is Tuesday night at home to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Note the start time, though. It is a 7:30 face-off, which means we'll be on the air at 6:30 with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend. Final score from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle tonight. Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Kraken. This has been your Flames Talk postgame show, available wherever you get your podcasts. And this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.